May it please the court.
You may proceed.
Thank you. We have a simple issue this morning. Does the trial court, at the time of initial custody determination, have the authority to require a parent to reside in a certain area or a particular place? We believe the answer to that question is no. We have a situation, factually, where right about the time of the filing of the paternity action here, mother moved to Ohio and resided there while the entire case was pending. The child in question here is now 5 and a half. She was 2 when all this started. As a result of the trial court's decision, Judge Schneider ordered the mother to move from Ohio and to reside in a 3-county area in the state of Missouri. The genesis of all of this was mom's roommate informed her that she was moving out and she needed to do something about her living arrangements. Dad had only seen the child, according to the evidence, about 5 to 10 times at that point, never been alone with the child, never paid support voluntarily, and was sporadically employed at that point and living with his parents.
The father says that the reason he didn't see the child much was that he was refused visitation because he hadn't paid his child support.
I think there is a little bit of a chicken or the egg problem there. There's also some evidence that, you know, he sent text messages saying, I'll be a good dad, I won't be around, wouldn't come to the hospital for the birth, did come afterwards, and never initiated any proceedings to establish his paternity until, however, he heard mom was leaving. That's when he decided to start that process. He never voluntarily did anything to do that. He could have taken those steps, and he did not.
And didn't the trial court, though, find that it was incredibly coincidental that mother moved to Ohio at the time that this petition was being filed when she didn't have a job or anything there?
Well, she didn't find that. She commented that on the record. If you read the whole transcript there, Judge Schneider apparently was laboring under the misapprehension that this information was available on CaseNet, and it isn't.
Right.
And so there wouldn't have been any way for anyone to find out this information, other than Mr. Knight, I guess, that it had been filed, because it wasn't available on CaseNet, it wasn't a public record, there was no way to find out that information until she was served.
What about the legal issue here? Assume for sake of this question that the trial court can't order relocation at an initial custody proceeding without any acquiescence, consent, or evidence. But what about the fact that you offered into evidence kind of a backup or an alternative custody plan that said, I think it's in the best interest that I get to stay where I am and have custody, but if you're not going to go that way before you give him custody, I'll come back and move, and that's kind of my plan B. That's my second choice. Whenever you make that offer, didn't you allow the trial court then to consider that?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
Then was it relevant at all?
I don't think it was relevant at all. I mean, realistically.
What about the concept of invited heir?
Well, you can't confer authority upon a court that it doesn't have.
Right.
And so if the court has no authority to order the relocation, her offer of that is some time during trial.
I could say that they don't have personal jurisdiction over me, but I can consent to personal jurisdiction.
Oh, I hesitate to ever use the word jurisdiction in this court after Mrs. Wernigan-Scala. That frightens me.
Well, but the court can enter orders based on the factual circumstance that the parties present to them. And the factual circumstance was that she either would live one place or the other at her choosing so that she could retain custody. So I don't see how you say it is not relevant that she said, rather than lose custody of my child, I choose to live in Missouri.
Well, I was talking about the authority, first of all. Secondly, I think, as we indicated in our reply brief, and the Eastern District talked about that as well, the DMG case out of Montana talked about really presenting a Hobson's choice. either she lives where she's chosen to live and doesn't have custody, or she gives up where she's chosen to live and moves back in order to retain custody.
If I understand, you are basically saying, I want to live where I've moved to with my child, but if you're going to take custody from me because I'm living here, then I'll move back. It's not that you were agreeing to move back, but you were saying,
correct,
if you would take custody, unless I move back, then I will do it. But you're saying the court had no authority to make that order in the first place, saying we'll take custody unless you move back. So your concession never really came into play.
That's exactly right, Your
Honor. It may seem somewhat extreme, but Solomon had, the parents in the Solomon case had somewhat the same choice. Rather than cut the child in half, plan B might be give it to the other parent.
Well,
it was Solomon.
Well, I do remember the Solomon story.
Put it this way. I mean, when you're strictly looking at the court's authority, I don't deny that your client can say, I don't have to move back. You make the choice. Okay, had the court done that, the court may have given your client custody and had some visitation, or the court may have given the opposing party custody. But you didn't force the trial court to make the difficult decision. You said, give us custody, let us stay where we want, but now before you give custody to the other side, we're willing to move back.
Well,
I mean, isn't that really in a summary what the evidence was that you presented?
In two ways, I see from the beginning of that testimony, I see where you go with that. But if you go then further, the testimony was, I really, really don't want to do this. Well, I'm only offering this if the judge absolutely makes me, then I'm offering that. Now, if the court has no authority, again, I don't think that matters. Secondly, I think it's very akin to the cases that I cited with regard to maintenance, where somebody says, oh, I really want maintenance. I want it at least for a year. I want it at least until I get remarried, or I want it at least until the commercial lease is up. And then the other side says, well, wait a minute, that's a waiver of maintenance beyond any of those events. And each court that's addressed something like that says, no, that's not a waiver of maintenance. That's just, in essence, a backup, a secondary plan. And that's not a waiver of maintenance. I think that's similar to what we have here. If the court, first of all, had no authority to do it, if it was unwise also to do it and constituted an abuse of discretion, presenting the backup plan does not indicate an acceptance of the court's authority and in essence, a waiver of contesting it.
The question I have is, if we believe the court has authority, for a policy reason, I mean, clearly, your argument, if we said, oh, no, that creates a Hobson's choice, your argument takes away from lots of custodial parents that alternative, so that it would say that no custodial parent could ever choose to remain in the state. If presenting to the court, you would only be able to present to the court the option that I want to move out of state and I want to take the child. And if the other side filed their motion to modify, then they would never have the option of moving back and retaining custody. And isn't that for policy purposes for custodial parents throughout, isn't that creating for them a very limited choice?
At the time of the initial determination, Your Honor?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe so. You know, there's a lot of things that...
I'm sorry, and I put in my hypothetical not the initial determination.
Oh, well, if it's not the initial determination, then we have 452.377. And we've already made a determination whether by agreement of the parties with holy water sprinkled on it by the trial court initially or as a result of a trial, we've already determined what the best interests of the child are. This is the living arrangement.
Right.
Whatever it is.
But even the initial determination, aren't you limiting the choices that the parents who seek custody want to not have that option of saying, I want custody no matter where I live, and I would choose to live somewhere else. I would choose to live in the state of Missouri rather than not have custody.
Well, there are a lot of things that a trial court can do at the time of an an initial proceeding in dissolution or paternity case, even separate and apart from custody, that if the parties agree, can be enforced, but generally can't be ordered by the trial court. Trial court, for example, generally can't order maintenance for a term of years, but the parties can cut a deal. And to a certain extent, I think that's what could happen here. If a parent that is living in Ohio or Illinois or Kansas, if they come to the conclusion that, you know, the trial judge thinks I shouldn't live there and I should live in Missouri, and if I don't move, the other parent's going to get custody, then that parent can make that decision. Now,
so
part of the process,
you're suggesting then that opposing counsel, the next time this scenario comes up, would just say, well, I object, Your Honor, it's irrelevant, because you can't take into consideration the fact that that you could move them back. I mean, it's kind of
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
It's one way or the other. You're looking at the bright line.
I think it is a bright line test, and I think that, you know, there hasn't been a case that has been presented in any of the briefing which has supported that. I mean, we've presented cases from outside of Missouri that have said you can't do this. It's either not. I'm
those
sorry,
cases,
Your Honor.
In those cases, did the non-resident party do what you did in this case, in the sense of offer the backup plan? Or did those cases where they contested cases where there was no backup plan offered?
I don't recall any discussion in either case of a backup plan, Your Honor. I don't think that was in either one of them.
So, counsel, your position is that even in this case, if both parents had put in their parenting agreement, as the mother did in her parenting agreement, that it would be acceptable for court, that they agreed that the mother should move back and retain physical custody, that a court would still have no authority to approve that settlement agreement?
Oh, no, the court would have authority to approve that if the parties agreed to it. And again, it's like maintenance for a term or a life, paying for a life insurance policy, which the parties would have the authority to agree to and the court could enforce, but the court couldn't say, you go out and buy a life insurance policy to pay for child support in case you die. And that's not
authorized.
Didn't
the parties, in essence, agree to that term here we have today?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I mean, that's why they had a trial.
Okay, but
isn't it a question of whether your clients agreed that your client got what she asked the court to do?
No, she didn't, Your Honor. If that was
she
the case,
she gave the court alternatives, and she got one of the alternatives that she asked the court for.
And she specifically said, "I don't want the second."
Is that in the transcript?
It is in the transcript. It's in the transcript right after the quoted language from the respondent. I put that in my reply brief saying, but you have to go further. You have to read what comes next.
Does it make a difference if the custodial parent is attempting to evade service and is playing a bunch of games and knows that this is probably coming and so takes off to avoid the authority of the court?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And I think it's very important here that Judge Schneider did make a determination that it was in the child's best interest to live in Missouri, like Judge Frawley did in the Fuge case, which the Southern District still decided we're not going to pay any attention to. She didn't make that determination. She made a determination that was in the best interest of the child to live in the sole physical custody of mother. Then she said, and this is the physical placement of the parties. I'm going to move people around and put it that way. But she didn't make a determination that it was in the best interest of the child to live with mother only in Missouri, and if not, then dad.
Would you have a beef had the court, in fact, decided that way?
I don't think the court would have the authority. Again, based on that move, based on the trial court saying you have to move from another state and you have to come back and you have to reside in a particular area.
But the court doesn't
have the authority to do that. I don't think that necessarily
but couldn't
matters.
But couldn't the court say, I think it's the best interest of the child to be in Missouri, so since only father's in Missouri, I'm going to give custody to the father. If mother were here, I might make a different determination. Isn't that another way of reaching the same result?
That can be a part of it under 452.375. I think that under those factors, those non-exclusive factors in terms of what's determining what's in the best interest of the child, that can be a factor for the court to determine that it is in the best interest of the child to be in the other parent's custody. But that's not what Judge Schneider did.
So what did Judge Schneider here said, best interest of the child to be with the mother in these three counties in Missouri?
No, if you read the judgment and then the parenting plan, she says it's in the best interest of the child to reside with mother in her sole physical custody. Then adopts the parenting plan, and the parenting plan says mom lives in three counties in Missouri.
And whose parenting plan was that?
Mom's.
That was Dad's.
What did Mom's parenting plan say?
Mom's parenting plan was she lives in Ohio.
Didn't she have the alternative parenting plan?
She did have the alternative parenting plan.
And what did it say?
It essentially provided, I think, for a Siegenthaler type custody arrangement, you know, every other weekend, you know, that kind of thing.
Did her alternative plan provide for her to live in Missouri?
As the backup, as the alternative plan.
So she presented to the court
a parenting plan
where she had custody of the child and lived in Missouri.
And said, if you make me move back, then this is what I would like.
Did it address the three-county issue, or
I don't believe it did,
Missouri?
I don't believe it did.
Any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Josh Knight, and I represent the father, LD, in this matter as appellant. Respondent and cross appellant. I want to, and certainly will field any questions that you wish to throw my way, address some of the facts as stated by Mr. Gillespie. He indicated that my client, the father, didn't seem to have much interest in the child, was not seeking any kind of custody arrangement, when in fact the evidence in the file and in the transcript show that though he was not there immediately upon the birth of the child, he was there very near subsequently at the time while she was still in the hospital with the child. Subsequent to the birth of the child and was admitted by mother in the case, my client between 5 and 10 times requested of mother to have a paternity test conducted. He in fact hired an attorney and had a letter mailed to mother, which was dated March 13, 2006, requesting that a paternity test be taken and an opportunity so that they could discuss child support as well as custody. That letter went unresponded by mother. My client also utilized March mediation in St. Charles County. Two letters were sent from March mediation in regard to the same issues. Will you please submit to a paternity test? I want to make sure that this is my child, and in the event this is my child, I would like to try to arrange, without litigation, custody and child support. Those two letters, by mother's admission, went without response by her. In fact, in the transcript of the trial, mother indicated that any request for a paternity test from father to her, she deemed it insulting and was not going to respond to that.
Did father offer to pay for the test or ask mother?
He did. He offered to pay for the test, absolutely. And at the time, and of course my client was trying to avoid the cost of litigation. He had had issues with work because he had been unemployed. Mr. Gillespie indicated and indicates in this brief that my client had a spotty work history. Now, my client had a very steady work history. What happened was one of the businesses he had worked for shut down. He went to work for another warranty business, something like that, related to warranty services, but because he had signed a non-compete previously, he was barred from that employment for a period of time, went to work for a car dealership, and once the non-compete issue was taken care of, went to work for the warranty service. That warranty service then locked the doors on everyone, refused to make payments to anyone, and so he was out of a job again. At the time of trial, he was unemployed, but it was based upon these issues, not because he was a layabout, not because he didn't want to work or pay child support, but because of the economy and because of some bad circumstances.
So there was a child support order. How did he admit paternity at some point, and how did he do that?
I believe, if I can recollect, the child support case was through the Division of Child Support Enforcement, and at such time a paternity test was taken then, which verified that he was father. A child support order was entered at that time.
And then did he seek visitation at that point?
At that point, he continued to try to talk to my mother about getting visitation, but was continued to be denied visitation. He was, by the time that mother left the state of Missouri and moved to Ohio, She was working here at Ameristar Casino, earning about $30,000. She had received in child support up to June of 2008, $3,774.43 from my client. So she was receiving child support. She had work.
How much behind was he?
At that point, he may have been a little bit behind. I don't think he was very far behind, though.
Did he appear at the hearing regarding child support to present the real problems he's had at getting employment?
The hearing went uncontested. There was an issue, and that was...
He didn't appear?
No, there was no appearance, and it was based on my client's indication was what is that they said a letter had been sent out indicating when the notice of hearing or when the hearing was going to be held. That he didn't receive that letter, that he followed up after the fact, but by that point it was too late. It had been entered, and so there at that point, because there had been an arrearage going back, he did owe back support because of the arrearage basis.
But he never appeared at the hearing. He was in default of the hearing with respect to or any appeal rights with respect to his child support.
Well, that's correct, Judge. That's correct.
So the order was issued without him there.
That's correct.
But he said he never got notice that there was a hearing or he had a chance of any due process.
That's correct. But but never was the issue in this case an issue of child support. My client never had an issue paying child support, and in fact would have voluntarily paid child support had mother just gone ahead and gone forward with his offer several times of getting a paternity test just to ensure that it was his child. Now, subsequently, obviously, mother had that done because she initiated the case of the Division of Child Support.
But there was a child support order. There was an order by the court saying he should pay child support, whether or not he determined paternity or not. I mean, it was an order by the court.
It was an administrative order through the Division of Child Support Enforcement after hearing because he failed to appear because of there was a notice issue. So the order came through Division of Child Support Enforcement. Of course, that has to be signed off on by the judge. But... yeah, I mean, it wasn't...
You're saying he hasn't contested child support since the paternity test was done. Is that right?
Well, contesting child support. I mean, other than in the case in chief regarding this, you know, what child support should be, who should be paying child support depending on what the custody was.
Sure.
I mean, there was no contest that he should have never been paying child support.
So tell me why, if you believe, does the court have authority in the initial determination to order relocation, or is that limited to motions to modify? I mean, without regard to whether or not there was a waiver here, just first of all, what is the court's authority? Can the court direct a party to move at the time, against their will, at the time of the initial custody determination?
Okay. Well, and premised on the basis that it was against their will, mm-hmm. I do believe the court has authority to do that. Now, I concede that it is not in 452, 350, or 375. I can see that there is not a case on point in the state of Missouri, nor do I believe Mr. Gillespie and I could find a case that indicated that the court has such authority. However, in looking at the facts and circumstances of this case, and also in looking at the case of In Re Marriage of Green, which was cited heavily by both sides in this matter, of course, that was a motion to modify action. But it was a situation where the father was attempting to enforce a provision in a settlement agreement that you had to be bound in a certain geographical area. Mother moved, and of course, then litigation followed. What the court said in that case is that it said to bind somebody or restricting the abode of the children to the two counties in that case was void against public policy. However, it caveated that by saying it's void against public policy without or when you do not consider the factors which might justify or prohibit a move. Now, it does not enumerate those factors. It doesn't say, okay, well, here's the bright line test for whether or not, you know, you can actually prohibit or force a move.
Well, what statutory authority would a judge have that wouldn't be violative of the Constitution to tell anybody where they had to live?
Well,
a judge may get to decide custody, may get to put children wherever he puts children, but what gives any judge the authority to tell anybody where they have to live?
Certainly. And my answer to that would be this, mm-hmm. is that I believe, based on the facts of this case, mother gave the court authority.
Well, they might give him jurisdiction to decide the case if there's a child conceived here. There's all sorts of things like that might give him jurisdiction to decide the case. But what gives the court the authority to order somebody to live anywhere?
Well, and in a general sense, when posed or framed in that light, I believe you're right. I mean, you know, where is the, I guess, the jurisdictional authority to say, well, you have to live here or you have to live there? So to a certain extent, I concede and I agree on that point. However, again, I think that this case is not, you know, a broad sweeping bright line test. I think it's based on all the facts and circumstances that occurred here. I think what occurred here is that based on the conduct that mother had engaged in prior to and almost immediately prior to the trial, first of all, by the 12 days prior to trial after this case had been pending for 7 months, filed the case up in the state of Ohio to remove jurisdiction from the state of Missouri. I think that was a major factor that the court took into consideration, saying, now, wait a second. You've been here for 7 months. You were living here at the time that you were served. You had not moved yet. Not a piece of property had been moved. A residence hadn't been moved. And she still retained employment in the state of Missouri. And you look at the fact that, though...
You're suggesting she had an obligation, assuming that she had a legitimate plan to move. If she gets served that day, she has to drop everything in order not to lose custody?
No, not under the statutes of Missouri. And certainly this was not technically a relocation case. However, I think what the court looked at is, again, the facts and circumstances of why the quick move. Now, granted, she was served...
Did the court actually make a finding on that? Opposing counsel says the court says it's curious, but that he satisfied that curiosity by showing that she could not have known through CaseNet that this action had been filed.
Certainly, and there was in our briefs that sort of back and forth about that issue. Right. Now,
what did the court actually say?
Yeah, the judge said, she premised it by, well, you know, did you know that this case had been filed or was going on? Mother said, no, I didn't. And she said, well, you know, are you familiar with CaseNet? You know, could you look on? Other attorney stepped in and said, Judge, a paternity case cannot be seen on CaseNet. You can't. And she said, okay, that clears up that issue for me because I am finding this whole move incredibly coincidental. So she did say, okay, that clears up the CaseNet issue. But if you look at the actual transcript, it was obviously that she was not basing her reasoning just on CaseNet.
Did she make any kind of finding that mother's move was to avoid service or to try to keep the child away from the father or anything else in her judgment, any findings?
Not in the judgment. There was no, it was basically, you know, it laid out.
Assume for sake of argument that the court can take into consideration, because one of the factors is which one of the custodial parents would likely continue to give frequent, meaningful contact with the parties. So I can see how a judge, if they thought somebody moved, if that was what they thought, takes that into consideration. But that factor only allows them to decide where the child lives. It still doesn't allow the trial court to have authority over where the party lives. I mean, it might be a consequence. A consequence of a bad act might result in you not getting custody, but it still doesn't give the court the authority to tell the person where to live, does it?
So, no, it does not. And I think that what the court was trying to do, again, in light of the fact that, and Mr. Gillespie is correct, mother said, look, I want to live in Ohio with my child, but if
did she have a job in Ohio?
She did not have a job in Ohio at the time she moved. She left her employment here. There was no employment waiting for her in Ohio.
Did she have a job when the case was going on in Ohio?
Excuse me?
When the case was going on in Missouri, did she have a job in Ohio?
She did. She subsequently got a job after she moved to Ohio.
Right.
But she did not move for a job because there was no job waiting.
And there's no other children involved?
No. One child.
Counsel, could the court have, let's say she had agreed to something incredulous like, you know, I want to keep the custody of my child. I'll join a convent in Ohio. Could the court have ordered that?
I don't believe the court could have ordered that. However,
how can they order it here?
Well, because I think that what mother did, and by comparison, when you look at a case that was cited in our brief, just briefly, was the Finneran v. Day case. I don't need to get into all the facts of that. But what the court said in its findings there, it said it was clear, it had a clear test that mother is unwilling to move back to Missouri and father has no intention of going to Texas. It was clear to the court where everybody stood. Here, by saying, well, look, I really don't want to, but if you're thinking about taking custody away from me, then I'll come back.
Now, if she moved back to Missouri, was it clear she had a job in Missouri?
Would she have a job in Missouri?
Right.
But obviously, at this point, no. There would be no job waiting in the wings for her
in Missouri. So she had a job in Ohio, and they'd be ordering her to come back to Missouri with the sole custody of the child, which seems to be some confidence in her, that she moved back to Missouri, but they have no job in Missouri.
Well, that's true.
And with no likelihood that the father's going to support her.
Well, but
support the child, because he has not had a good record of paying child support.
Well, I would have to disagree, Your Honor, about not having a good record of child support. I think
he's still behind, isn't he?
No. He was current as of the date of trial and has been current since. No.
Counsel,
yes.
Looking at the judgment, which I believe I have correctly on page A3, it does not make these two things contingent. Paragraph 4 says the respondents awarded sole physical custody and they're awarded joint legal custody, and that's in the best interest of the child. Then paragraph 5 says the court hereby orders that respondent shall return to the state of Missouri with the minor child on or before set date and will have to live in one of these three counties. She doesn't say, I find it's in the child's best interest to live with mother if she returns. It doesn't seem to make those two contingent. It just orders sole custody with mom and orders mom to return. I don't think we know from this what the court would do if the court, if this court were to say that the trial court could not order mother where to live, whether the mother would grant sole custody, grant joint custody, you know, what she would do. She certainly doesn't make it contingent, though, in what she's written here.
Certainly. And I'm not indicating to you that the language of the judgment was absolutely clear-cut. I mean, obviously, we have arguments about, you know, what was, you know, supposedly in the mind of the judge at the time she entered this thing. However, I do think that it becomes an issue when someone presents a parenting plan by saying...
But she doesn't say the parties have agreed that mother will move to Missouri. I mean, it's not based, doesn't seem to be based on any consensus agreement. She simply says mom has to move and mom gets custody. And are we making assumptions we really can't make that she was basing this on some sort of agreement to the parties that she thought had been reached as a backup plan or whatever?
But it is not explicit. There's no question about that. And you're right. There are various assumptions, which is in part of our prayer on this appeal is to say, you know, mother requests that you just strike out the provision that says she's got to move back with the child, grant sole custody to her in Ohio, and then make arrangements for visitation with them in Missouri. I think that is ultimately and absolutely improper because in light of the facts and circumstances of the case, and I think what the judge was doing was attempting to split the baby, if you will. I think that had she been given a clear choice of mom is not coming back and dad is in Missouri, that there was a great chance that father would have been granted custody. The waters were muddied by that.
If this court were to find that the court could not order mother where she has to live, would it be your request that then we send it back down for a new hearing on custody, or you think?
I believe that is the most, I mean, we can engage in supposition, meaning myself and Mr. Gillespie, about what the court should have done or what the court meant. But in light of everything that's happened, including some of these appeal bond issues, which became part of the legal file, I think the only way to properly determine is to give the trial judge an opportunity to look at this and say, now I know what's really going on. Now I know that you don't really want to come back. You're going to stay in Ohio. Dad's going to be in Missouri. Now let's take it the way it is, as opposed to these other issues that were placed into evidence by mother.
And was it clear in the briefs, were the family support members for both the father and the mother? I realize the mother's mother lives in Ohio and the father's parents are in Missouri and the sister. Were the other family support members?
Well, with father, I mean, his whole family lives here, as you said. His mother and father, his sister, brother-in-law. The mother's family, her father lives here and stepmother. And up in Ohio, I believe her mother, stepfather, and sister may reside there. But then mother also has family in Canada from where she's from. She's not a citizen of the United States. But
so the majority of the family members live in Missouri.
That's correct.
So that could have been part of the judge's decision.
Absolutely. And I think when you look at the briefs and you look at the transcript, my clients, you know, family all testified, hey, we're involved in this. And in fact, the mother allowed my client's family to be involved with the child upon the condition that he not be around. And that was not refuted. My client could not be around if his family was going to get to see the child.
Any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Russell, is a kind of a follow-up to that question you had. I think we can crystallize this to a certain extent, saying, could we make Dad move? Could we make Dad move to Ohio to be with the child? I don't think any one of us would think that that would be possible or even advisable.
What if the dad had put that in his parenting plan?
That was my next situation. I don't think the court would have had the authority to order that if it was a backup. I mean, just like Mom's was. If he says, I want custody here, which is what he said at trial, but he says, if you'll give me custody, I'll move to Ohio. I don't think the court necessarily would have had the authority then to say, okay, you have to move to Ohio.
What if it wasn't a backup plan? What if Mother's first alternative in her parenting plan was, I want custody and I'm willing to move to Missouri? Then where would we be today?
In essence, it would almost be like some of the cases where, but in reverse, of some of the divorce cases where somebody says, I want to relocate. Give me the authority or the permission to relocate in advance. I'm living here, but if you let me do that, then I'll go to wherever. Usually, obviously, it's outside the state. I've never seen one where it's that way.
Go ahead.
I think if she stated an intent that was not contingent upon anything, if she said, I am moving back to 123 Maple Street in St. Charles on X date, give me custody.
So could the court have said that? Could the court have said, based upon Mother's agreement that she'll return to Missouri if she gets custody, I award custody to Mother and here in Missouri, but your objection is that they didn't say that. They said Mother must move.
I think in that situation, it's kind of like, it's not unusual in divorce cases where, you know, the house is being sold, let's say, and everybody knows that the parties are moving somewhere, and the judge, in making the initial custody determination, knows that I'm giving custody to one party and certain, or it's joint physical custody and some visitation rights to the other, and where they are when this comes out is where they start pursuant to 452.377.
So you think there's a difference between whether it's Mother's plan A or plan B? If it's her plan A that I will move back to Missouri and keep custody of my child, differs than if it's plan B, I will move back to Missouri and keep the custody of my child. Aren't they both, in a sense, a petition to the court to allow me to do this or to agree to do this?
No, I think then she's stuck. It's almost like she's establishing her domicile if she says she's doing that. If she says, I'm going to live here, even though I'm in Ohio right now, I'm living here, then, you know, quite frankly, if she gets custody and goes back to Ohio, she's in violation of the order at that point, or she's got to jump through the hoops of
457. There's no issue then, because the issue is whether or not at the original inception of the action, the court can order her back to Missouri. If she says, I'm going to live in Missouri, then there's no issue. Well, she's not contesting living outside Missouri.
I think that's correct.
Well, what's the difference here? Because I thought I had it figured out, but now I'm confused.
I thought I had it too, Your Honor.
So what I hear you saying is that I guess the bottom line is why would you and your client offer to do something you're really not willing to do?
Well, I think.
In other words, either. Judge, you can consider, we'll do what we're telling you, and you can believe it, or not.
I think in Judge Russell's question, I think that sets up a situation where Mom is stuck. She's not presenting any alternatives. She's saying, I'm living here. Just like Dan says, I'm living in St. Charles.
Okay, here's what I don't understand that. Judge, you can either consider all my evidence, or you can't consider all my evidence. And I don't, that's the part I don't understand how you can tell the judge you can consider all of it, but now if I win, I nearly didn't want you to consider part of it.
Well, I think in Judge Russell's question, it is very similar to what happens, like I said, in a lot of divorces, where at the time we're trying the case, we don't know where anybody's actually living because the house is going to be sold. And so they both actually have to move. And they're stating their intentions to be in a certain, you know, relative vicinity. You know, they're living in Kirkwood in the house, but one's going to move to Webster or is contemplating that, and the other one's going to go out to Valley Park or whatever it may be. But the judge has before it, or the court has before it, the stated intention. This is where we're going once this situation goes out the door. And I think in Judge Russell's question, if mom says, look, I know I'm in Ohio, I'm moving back, case closed, it's done, I'm here.
Are you saying that situation, in Judge Russell's situation that she posed, the court could order mother to move to Missouri or simply acknowledge?
I think simply acknowledge. I don't think she'd have the authority to order her to move, just acknowledge that she's there, and then it's like these other situations. If then mom wouldn't come back, she'd be, I guess she would be subject to 452.377 under that scenario, because some of the cases, and I can't specify which one, but some of the cases talk about that in the initial divorce situation where somebody says, I'm here in Missouri, I want to move to Texas, so they apply 452.377 in making the determination whether they're going to let mom go in advance or dad go in advance.
But if you've changed your position a little bit, but if we go to Judge Russell's position, you're saying the reason your client can't be held with her offer of having custody in Missouri is because she said she didn't want it. But if someone came to the court and offered and said, I want to live in Ohio, but I will willingly live in Missouri if that's what's necessary to retain, to have an award of custody, that's okay? Or are you saying that's never okay?
I don't even think you can do that, Your Honor. I think in Judge Russell's scenario, I think it's a stated intention. This is what I am doing. There's no...
That was your scenario. No. I'm not sure it was her scenario.
No, you're right.
Oh. I have to start listening better. I apologize.
The other question I have for you is, what's the remedy? Because clearly the trial court's award of custody was based on the parenting plan the court entered. And so you're asking that we just remove one provision that she made regarding residency and allow the rest to remain, where, as opposed to your opponents arguing that we vacate the award of custody if we rule in your favor on the authority issue, and send it back and let the trial court determine where custody should be without your client's offer that she's willing to live in Missouri.
We've asked for, and I think this is really the only way you can do it, is to eliminate the requirement that she move back and implement the custody plan that mom asked for.
But that's not what the court did. So
well,
you're not asking us to just eliminate that one provision. You're asking us to impose a different award of custody.
And wouldn't that be a changed circumstance?
You can't have a changed circumstance during the initial determination, Your Honor. If we're making the determination as of the time of the trial, if somebody wanted to file a motion to modify of this particular judgment, I guess they could, and there's case law that will allow for that, but if we're still making the initial determination, there's no change in circumstances. Now, the problem I see is that the trial court made a determination that it is in the best interest of this child that mom have custody, despite all of the
well, you could have filed a motion to modify in this case instead of an appeal.
I don't think there's any changed circumstances, Your Honor.
Well, the changed circumstances is I no longer agree to move back to Missouri.
I don't think she agreed to
move.
I've changed my mind.
I'm not willing to move back to Missouri. Why isn't that a changed circumstance?
She'd have to come in and say, I mean, part of our situation is we don't think the court was had the authority to do what it did, nor was it right to do what it did.
No, I understand. So, I'm saying you had a choice. You
yeah.
could appeal.
We could have waited 6 months and filed a motion to modify. But, you know, obviously part of the problem would be she would have to get up, she'd have to leave Cleveland, come back to Missouri, find a job, start all that process over again, and then file a motion to modify and say there's some changed circumstances in some way, shape, or form. I guess her move, theoretically, I guess at that point would be a changed circumstance, but, or she runs the risk of violating the court order, not moving, and staying up in Ohio and filing a motion to modify at that point.
Are there any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.